As we wrap up 2025, one thing's clear. Uncertainty isn't temporary. It's the world we live in now. Noble Gold Investments helps Americans protect what they've built with real gold and silver, holding value when everything else feels uncertain. Visit NobleGoldInvestments.com and take your first step toward a safe future. This holiday season, when you open up a qualified account, you'll receive 10 one-ounce commemorative silver holiday coins. Visit Noble Gold today.
Past performance may not be indicative of future results. Investing in precious metals, including gold, involves risks. Consult with your tax attorney or financial professional before making an investment decision.
Good afternoon, my conscious co-creators. Good morning, good evening, wherever you're tuning in from. Welcome to another edition of the Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity. I am very, very pleased that you are all here with me today. We've got another wonderful show in store for you. I've got a fascinating guest who I can't wait to bring on. But first, of course, we have our blog post from a couple of years ago to give you something to think about. So today's blog post is entitled, "To Take Care of Others, We Must Fill Up Our Own Cup." Many of us want to help others. Our nature is to care for people, whether it is our family, friends, or neighbors. Yet often there is one person we often forget about, the most important person of all. For those who are so focused on being a caretaker, we often forget about ourselves, about our own needs, and what it takes to recharge our own batteries. Sometimes we end up in the role of caretaker not because we want to, but because we have to. Perhaps we have a child with challenges, or aging parents who require us to devote more time to their well-being. It does not have to be that it is our profession, yet we can find ourselves in that role regardless. Once those responsibilities fall on our shoulders, it can be hard for us. It can drain us. Without a good support system in place for ourselves, we can feel trapped or stuck. And this is precisely the time we need to take care of ourselves. The act of self-care is not a selfish act. It is the recognition that we need to fill up our own cup in order to be able to help others. The others could be anyone, even our clients or business associates. There are demands on us every single day. Yet most of the time, we just shoulder the responsibility and keep going without a thought for what we need to keep going. When this happens, we will eventually have a breakdown. We will work until we drop, and then we are forced to take time for ourselves, either by choice or by circumstance. For when we do not take the time to take care of ourselves, we could experience a breakdown physically, mentally, or emotionally. I should have added an or spiritually too. Rather than waiting for some time beyond our control to happen that takes us out of the situation, it is far better to find a way to practice self-care when we are in the midst of all that is happening, to find our own calm in the eyes of chaos, even if it's just a few minutes to relax and breathe, to catch a quick nap when we feel tired, perhaps even take a short walk outside to get a break from the pressure of the situation. Every situation is different, and every situation has a solution. We just need to lean into finding it for ourselves. It might be a hard truth to face, but no one can practice self-care for us. The act of taking care of our own needs is truly up to us. And life will support us in finding a way to do that. Our job is to lean in that direction, to at least consider what can we do to fill up our own cup. When we put our energy in that direction, the solution will come to us. Once it does, it is up to us to act on it. For ultimately, only we can take care of ourselves. So I wrote this blog post a couple of years ago after having several, not just one, but several people in a group session with me who were all caretakers. Like they either had children with developmental disabilities, aging parents actually was even more common, or some relative that they had to be the caretaker for. And they took time off to come to a group with me and my wife as an act of self-care. And so many people were like, oh, I needed this so much. And so while I've heard people talking about self-care for the last 10, 15 years, while I talk about it myself a lot, I guess I just felt that it's such an important topic, and it can be so challenging to find our way into it that just having the conversation, just bringing it up to our consciousness so that we can consider, what can I do to practice better self-care? I just felt it was so important. And I'm quite fortunate, and my wife and I, we both say to each other, we're quite fortunate. Neither of us really had to take care of our parents because my mom moved to Israel when she was 91 and moved into an assisted living facility there. My sister, who lives in Israel, which is why she moved, ended up actually spending a lot of time and taking care of my mom. My wife is from China. Her whole family's in China. Her mom was in China. So towards the end of her life, her sister ended up taking care of her mom. So we both were fortunate in that we never had to experience being a caretaker in that way so intensely. I've experienced being a caretaker early in life, taking care of a friend of mine who was schizophrenic. That was quite challenging. And my sister not only took care of my mom, but one of her kids is special needs. And you know, he's now over 30 years old and living in a group home. But so much of her life, I saw and I really looked up to how she was able to take care of him and still find her own peace, still find time for herself. And so I saw it can be done. It's not always easy. It doesn't always look like what we would want it to look like. But it definitely is possible. And I guess that's my message for this week, is no matter who you're taking care of, no matter what the situation is, and I get it, if you have elderly parents with dementia, if you have special needs kids, if you're taking care of someone who's, I don't know, some terminal illness, it can be really, really challenging. I get it. But self-care in those situations is even more important than just in regular life. if we need to be there for other people, we need to find a way to show up the best that we can. And that means finding whatever it is we need to take care of ourselves, even if it's just in little ways to begin with. But find a way to take a break. So that's my blog post for this week. It's entitled, again, To Take Care of Ourselves, We Must Fill Up Our Own Cup. And if you like my blog post, you can find lots of them at my personally branded website, theconsciousconsultant.com, or at the radio station's website, talkradio.nyc/blog. And don't forget, I do have a book full of my writings called Everyday Awakening. So you can find even more of my writings there. All right. Now, it is my extreme pleasure to welcome to the show Dee Dee Goldpaw, a psychotherapist, educator, and leading voice in the intersection of psychedelics, sexuality, and healing. With over 17 years of clinical experience, Dee Dee serves as clinical director of Chrysalis Integrative Psychotherapy, Women and Gender Diversity Advisor for the Chakruna Institute, and part of the ketamine-assisted psychotherapy team at Woodstock Therapy Center. In their groundbreaking book, Embrace Pleasure, How Psychedelics Can Heal Our Sexuality, they redefine what it means to heal sexual trauma and reclaim embodied joy. And this is what that book looks like right here. So, Dee Dee, welcome to the Conscious Consultant Hour.
Thank you so much for having me, Sam. I'm thrilled to be here.
My pleasure. My pleasure. So I always like to kind of start off with, like, how did you get here from there? And I guess the there is, like, when you were in school studying, I guess, to be a psychologist or a therapist or whatever, like, I don't know, but I imagine that, you know, ending up writing a book about the intersection of psychedelics and pleasure might not have been on top of your goals, was it?
Correct. Yes. Yes. My career has unfolded in a way that has been surprising to all around me. And in some ways, completely unsurprising. So I can tell you a little bit about my personal journey, knowing all of the different threads of experience that led to this book are complex, right? As they are for anyone. So one version of my story is that I went to school to study psychotherapy. I took a very sort of, in some ways, traditional track of becoming a psychodynamic therapist, which is basically what we think of as a talk therapist. Mm-hmm. I then started to study sex therapy. I became, you know, skilled in working with sex therapy clients, and then realized that I really needed a robust education around trauma healing and mostly somatic practices with the body to really effectively work with people around sexuality. So that's a very, in some ways, mundane version of like what my trajectory clinically has been. The much more important story that I can share with you about myself is, like many people who gravitate to different fields, I myself am a sexual trauma survivor, and I experienced PTSD for many years. I tried many different kinds of treatments, and they were helpful for me. Psychotherapy did help me. Meditation helped me profoundly. Those things helped me to get to a point in my life where I was surviving, where I was able to be a productive person. And I still had some sense that there was something very much missing for me. And at a certain point in time, I was introduced to psychedelic medicines in ceremonial contexts. So we're talking about the use of psychedelics in contexts that are led by ceremonial facilitators. So that looks different than what we would think of as psychedelic assisted therapy. And it looks very different than what we think of as the recreational use of psychedelics. And that opened a whole world for me. I began to heal trauma on a level that I did not know was possible. And some of it was very painful and difficult. I had to confront terrible things that had happened, and especially my early ceremonial work. It required a lot of support because I had to go into memories and allow my body to transmute pain that it had been holding for a very long time. But really, where this book comes into play is that I reached a certain point in my healing trajectory. And I was in Peru. I have traveled to Peru many times for healing work. And I was introduced to the medicine San Pedro, which is one that in the West, it's never really become very popular or well known. And I have my own sort of spiritual assumptions about why that might be. But it's a beautiful medicine, and it's known as a medicine that heals the heart. And just for listeners' point of reference, it's chemically closer to MDMA than it would be to a medicine like psychedelic mushrooms. So San Pedro is very much an inner experience of love, an inner experience of connecting to the earth. And when I took that medicine in Peru for the first time, I did not even understand what was still waiting for me, because it was the first day that I could remember in my life of feeling awake, alive, connected to my body, connected to the earth, without any thoughts of trauma. I was simply present in my humanity. And that's when I realized that that moment of pleasure was the healing, that all of this hard work was leading up to this point. So my book, you know, I feel very proud of it. And it is about sexuality, and it is about pleasure in the conventional sense that we think about sexuality and pleasure. But really, I'm pointing to something much deeper, which is what happens when we heal enough in ourselves to be alive in the authentic experience of being a human being, the pleasure of connecting to the earth, the pleasure of connecting to other people, and connecting to our own bodies. The sexuality piece of it for me, I mean, I am a sex therapist. To me, my interest in writing about sexuality really had a lot to do with the fact that I feel like, although we are in a culture that in many ways is steeped in sex, very few of us have really positive sexual role models. Many of us carry a lot of negative internalized narratives about sex. And so to me, it seemed like an arena where we carry so much harm and shame, but also one that could blossom into something that is so healthy, beautiful, pleasurable, tapping into our very life force. So I look at the erotic as something having to do with our life force as human beings. And that's the aspects of sexuality that I find much more interesting.
Yeah, beautiful, beautiful. I have so many follow-up questions, and there were so many points that you touched upon that I want to ask you about, but we need to take our first break. So I'm going to hold them. I'm going to ask you when we come back, especially I want to find out what your spiritual assumptions about San Pedro not being more popular and other things around sort of sexual trauma and how common it is. But first, we're going to take this quick break. So everyone, please stay tuned. You're listening to the Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity. We do this every Thursday, 12 noon to 1 p.m. Eastern Time, right here on talkradio.nyc and all over social media. And we'll be right back with our guest, Dee Dee Goldpaw, author of the book, Embrace Pleasure, in just a moment.
Are you a conscious co-creator? Are you on a quest to raise your vibration and your consciousness? I'm Sam Liebowitz, your conscious consultant. And on my show, The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, we will touch upon all these topics and more. Listen live at our new time on Thursdays at 12 noon Eastern Time. That's The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, Thursdays, 12 noon on talkradio.nyc.
Are you a high-achieving, growth-oriented leader? Are you interested in developing your authentic leadership while creating a healthy, inclusive workplace? Hi, I'm Dr. Mira Bronku, host of The Hard Skills on talkradio.nyc at 5 p.m. Eastern on Tuesdays, where we discuss how leaders develop the hard skills needed to make a greater impact. We interview experts, have live coaching, and tackle these challenges. Listen to The Hard Skills on Tuesday at 5 p.m. Eastern on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.
And welcome back to the Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity. We're speaking this hour with Dee Dee Goldpaw, author of the book, Embrace Pleasure. So Dee Dee, in our first segment, you mentioned a number of things. One thing I just want to start with is something that I've noticed, and as most of my loyal listeners know, my wife is a psychotherapist as well, who does trauma therapy, and we do some healing work together. But sexual trauma is so common in both men and women. I've heard the statistics that it could be as high as 1 in 3 women have experienced some kind of sexual trauma in their life. So I imagine you must be really busy in your practice, or are you not, because people are afraid to confront that?
My practice, both fortunately and unfortunately, is always full. So it's interesting, as I was delving into trauma in this book, when you talk about a statistic like 1 in 3 women, there are various statistics because, of course, the reporting of sexual trauma becomes a difficult thing to get accurate numbers on. And there are certain populations that certainly have much higher risk of being sexually traumatized than others. I decided to take an entirely different approach to trauma in my book. Mm-hmm. So sexual trauma and violence exists on a spectrum. And the beginning of that spectrum is the sexual trauma that we all recognize in our culture, right? When someone has been sexually abused in childhood, someone has been sexually assaulted as an adult. Many of my clients, unfortunately, have had these experiences, and they come to my practice for healing work. But when I came to realize over, you know, now almost 18 years of being a therapist, clients would come in and not mention anything about sexual trauma at all. They would identify themselves as someone who had not been traumatized. But when we started to delve into their history, their sexual history, their relational history, it turns out they were full of experiences that prevented them from being able to connect with pleasure, from being able to be fully safe in their bodies, from being able to kind of lean into their full erotic potential. And so what I really started to think about is maybe we need not a new clinical framework for trauma, because we have diagnosis for a reason. There's a reason that PTSD as a diagnosis has very specific criteria. But we as clinicians could actually start to approach our clients more holistically and understand that anything that they had experienced that impacted their ability to be present with pleasure in an enduring way, and that's a really key part of this, in an enduring way, could be considered trauma. So the reason I say that is because paradoxically, I think the word trauma gets thrown around a lot in our culture. And just because we have difficult experiences, that they aren't necessarily traumatic. But when our body holds on to something long-term, when our body is unable to metabolize something that has happened to us, I think it's arguable to say that includes far many more people and could meet a criteria for sexual trauma.
Yeah, I just feel like so many people get touched by this, and sometimes it's never spoken about. It, you know, it's like it's never brought up, because there's so much shame and there's so much self-criticism around it, of kind of blaming ourselves for it. But now when we take sort of sexual trauma and we bring in psychedelics, where somebody is very, very open in an experience, that can be a very tricky container to navigate, can't it? Because, I mean, I've personally heard of you know, inappropriate behavior in containers, of facilitators taking advantage of their role, of people getting re-traumatized because they're working through their trauma, and then somebody, you know, takes advantage because they're not completely aware, they're not completely present to what's going on.
Yes. Yeah. The issue of sexual misconduct in psychedelic spaces is incredibly important to address. And there's actually a whole chapter in the book where I write about power and desire and sexual abuse and the prevention of sexual abuse in psychedelic spaces. I feel really honored that I have been involved in several different sort of approaches to restorative justice within the psychedelic community addressing harms that have happened. But I think it's really important to say that sexual harm and people who perpetrate it are not a psychedelic problem per se. They are a human problem because, unfortunately, in psychotherapy, the most common reason that psychotherapists are sued by clients is because of sexual misconduct.
Right.
So I began in the researching of the book to try to understand what circumstances lead to this type of behavior and how it could be prevented. And so I'll just briefly touch on that, and then we can go more robustly into the client side, how sexual trauma is healed. So what's really interesting is when we hear about cases of sexual abuse occurring in psychedelic spaces, they're often the most egregious ones, right, that come to light. And it is very often the case that perpetrators who are, let me see if I can express this correctly, people who perpetrate harm in any kind of clinical space, whether it's psychedelic, clergy members, psychotherapists, are unlikely to be, to fit the profile we have in our mind as a narcissist or a sociopath. That's about 25% of people who cause harm. But the caveat is those 25% of perpetrators harm a lot of people.
Yeah.
The most common group of people are people who are working in isolation, who have unhealed trauma themselves, and lack community support and accountability. Those people tend to transgress with one person because they become obsessed with the idea that they have something special that will heal this person, or a sexual relationship could be appropriate in this one case, and it leads them to violate their own ethics. Those people are actually very amenable to rehabilitation. So it's an interesting thing that it's important for us to get to, in order to protect people, what we actually need is a lot more robust community support, because there will always be perpetrators that are really perpetrators of harm. But the many more cases of harm happen with people that could be prevented if we had better sort of community accountability and support. So I hope I explained that in a clear way.
Yes.
But to move on to the people on the other side. So let's say I am a person who's experienced sexual trauma. I am a person who's experienced sexual trauma. And going into a psychedelic space to do that healing work, I think it's incredibly important that we find spaces that are safe to us with trusted facilitators. And this is a reason why psychedelic prohibition is still so problematic, because people are left doing that in the shadows and finding accountability, finding, you know, we don't exactly have Google reviews for psychedelic facilitators.
Right. So let me ask a question. I just want to use you as an example. So you had done, before you engaged in psychedelics, you had already done some healing work, right? You'd already seen a therapist, you'd already done some work. What was it that brought you to be, to make the decision that, oh, I think using psychedelics on this particular area could really help me a lot?
Because talk therapy never enabled me to really access the healing that I needed in my body in the way that psychedelics could.
Right. Because psychedelics is a much more somatic experience. So it's a way of sort of, I don't know, unlocking what's sort of trapped in the body, so then you could really move through things in a much deeper way.
Psychedelics puts right in front.
Support for this podcast is brought to you by Walden University. Ever catch yourself thinking, what if I could go after what I actually want and really make a difference? You're not alone. And that's exactly why I want to tell you about Walden University. For over 50 years, Walden has helped working adults like you get the W, with the knowledge and skills to build the future you want and make a difference where it matters most. If you've been waiting for the right moment, this is it. Head to waldenu.edu and take that first step. Walden University, set a course for change, certified to operate by Chev.
To view something that must be gone through, right? We cannot stop a psychedelic experience once it starts, which can mean it could be very difficult. But another aspect of the psychedelic experience that people have very commonly is that they feel very much held in love. They feel a sense of either God or a spirit guide or an ancestor or the spirit of the plant itself. Or in the case of synthetic medicines like MDMA, which work extremely well for healing sexual trauma, it downregulates the nervous system enough that we're able to actually work with the content of traumatic material. And that is what is so unique to psychedelic healing for sexual trauma.
Beautiful, beautiful. I want to get into more now the positive side of things, but I want to take a break first. So when we come back, let's talk about what is so potent about using pleasure as a healing path? And why is it something also that's so, I don't want to say shunned, but
taboo.
So taboo or so unusual, like so, so minimized in our culture. Okay. And I'm going to ask you about San Pedro when we come back as well. So everyone, please stay tuned. You're listening to the Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity. We're speaking with Dee Dee Goldpaw, author of the book, Embrace Pleasure. And we'll be right back in just a moment.
Misalignment within your sales team or with a client stalls deals and creates unnecessary friction for you and the client, resulting in up to 37% lower win rate. If you're in pre-sales, sales, sales management, or sales enablement, and you'd like to increase revenues, win rate, margins, client satisfaction, and stay competitive, this show is for you. Hi, I'm Art Fromm, host of the Making Seamless Sales Show. Please join me live Thursdays at 7 p.m. Eastern on talkradio.nyc.
Have you ever wondered what truly lies beneath the calm? I'm Jacinta Yang. Join me every Wednesday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time on Talk Radio NYC as we explore healing, self-discovery, and the space where science meets spirits to help you find peace in a busy world. Take a deep breath and tune in to Beneath the Calm, where every conversation guides you back to the calm within.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC at www.talkradio.nyc. Now broadcasting 24 hours a day.
And welcome back. So, Dee Dee, I got to ask you about San Pedro because I've danced with grandfather. For those that don't know, ayahuasca is usually referred to as grandmother, and San Pedro is usually referred to as grandfather. It's a cactus, grows high in the Andes. It's not like peyote. It's peyote is much more an experience more like ayahuasca. And as you said, San Pedro or Huachuma, it's more an experience closer to something like MDMA. I've heard people also say it's closer to something like 5-MeO-DMT. And you said a little snippet of like, oh, you have a certain assumption why it's not as popular or well-known. I'm curious what that assumption is.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'll try and answer that question succinctly. So my personal belief, and many people who work in the field of psychedelic science and therapy would disagree with this, so I'll give that disclaimer. Okay. My experience, I believe very strongly that these plants are spirit allies with their own unique consciousness and their own will. Mm-hmm. And I think... I don't want to go into this too deeply, but many of what we've seen try to sort of move forward in the field of psychedelic science and therapy that's sort of fallen apart in the past couple of years. Like we thought these medicines were all going to be blockbuster pharmacological treatments with high price tags. And that's really been delayed, and the rolling out of psychedelics into medicine is it has an uncertain future. I'm not saying it won't happen; it will, but it's not as clear about how it's going to happen as it was maybe 4 years ago.
Right, like everyone was counting on MAPS getting approval for MDMA as a PTSD, and then things came out, and actually one of the things was in their study was one couple therapists like not being appropriate with a client.
Indeed.
You know?
Yeah. And it not being handled well on the back end. Right. So going back to San Pedro, it's very interesting to me that within that paradigm where they have tried to remove psychotherapy from psychedelic work, they are trying to make these cost-effective and short treatments as possible to target specific symptoms. Yeah. San Pedro just cannot be approached in that way. It's a long medicine. The experience is 12 or more hours. It's subtle. It might take hours for you to fully feel it in your body. And I believe my experience with that medicine is that he is a very gentle healer who comes to the people that need him. And I don't see a world where this is co-opted into the models that we have in the West for psychedelic assisted therapy, even though people are using San Pedro in this country for sure, growing it and using the plant. If we contrast that to ayahuasca, also a very strong plant spirit, but she has moved all around the world. And indigenous healers that I have learned from, so I'm not claiming this as my own thought, but felt that it could be that we're in such a moment of climate crisis that she has emerged from the jungle to wake people up. San Pedro, you know, I feel as though he's not amenable to fitting into a medical model. And he is, in my experience, a very subtle healer that comes right to your heart and finds you when you need him.
Very cool. Very cool. I wanted to ask about it because I too believe that engaging with psychedelics is a spiritual practice. Like, it's not just about healing. There's so much focus on healing and the trauma and this and that, but it's beyond that. It's like, that's just the beginning levels.
Yes.
There's something much deeper to it. and in your work and in the book, you know, you look at pleasure as medicine itself or as healing itself and as a practice in and of itself. Why is, you know, as you said, like in this society, it's sort of very sexualized, but still sexual stuff is very taboo. Like in Europe, they're much more, well, at least they used to be. I don't know what it's like now.
Yeah.
They were much more open and much more casual about it. In the United States, there's some kind of a dance we have around sexuality and pleasure that's like fascinated with it and shunning it at the same time.
Yes. Yes. Well, let me just start first with explaining to listeners how I define pleasure itself, because we are in a culture that is steeped in leisure. I mean, you could sit on your phone and scroll all day long. You can eat foods you really like. You can do just activities you enjoy. Those things are great. I am not anti-leisure. I think you should enjoy your life. But I'm not trying to put forward a thesis that those things itself are healing. To me, the way I'm defining pleasure is when we have a moment of good feeling, of being steeped with a positive sensations in our body, and that is matched with a quality of mindfulness or savoring the sensual. So it has to be that awakened quality that I describe in the San Pedro experience, right? You don't need San Pedro for it, but it might mean that you're taking a walk in the woods and you are completely in tune with the sounds you're hearing, with what you're experiencing around you. When you're with a lover or a partner, you are focused on them. And in that way, the sensual experience of connection to the world and to other people can very much heal us and wake us up.
It sounds to me like what you're talking about really is presence in the moment of pleasure.
Yes. Yeah. That would be a way of saying it.
Because it just, in the way you were talking about it, reminded me of a woman I knew who was an Indian woman who was a healer, an energy healer. And she described to me a moment when she was just sitting in a cafe, having a cup of tea, And she somehow, from her meditation practice and the work she had done, she had cultivated this level of presence that she was so present to the moment and seeing people walk by and the smell of the tea and the taste and what was going on around her. It sounds like you're talking about the same thing, but just in context of, some form of physical pleasure.
Yeah, well, I start in the book by just talking about pleasure in general and then thinking, how do we apply this to the sexual arena? So really, my sort of elevator pitch in a lot of ways for the book is that all people deserve a positive relationship with their sexuality. When we endeavor to heal our traumas, it opens us up to deeper levels of love and connection. And that spirituality is an intrinsic part of every person's sexuality, no matter what spirituality means for you. And that psychedelics can help us with all of this. So the way I bring the psychedelic angle in specifically with erotic pleasure and sexual pleasure is that I think psychedelics can really help us profoundly to dismantle the harmful narratives that make it impossible for us to be really present with pleasure. They help us to have empathy for other people and empathy for ourselves. I absolutely loved your blog post you read at the beginning because I thought it was so on point with what we're talking about today, right? Like all of these ways that it could actually be very simple if we're connected to our breath, we're connected in a moment to the earth, right? These don't have to actually be these huge dramatic things to bring us into contact with pleasure. So this deepening of empathy in our relationships, I also think psychedelics, and I'm drawing from science. I'm not just saying this is what I think psychedelics do. There's a lot of evidence that has emerged in peer-reviewed research that backs this up. And then the last little bit is that psychedelics also induce a state of openness, meaning that we have sort of fixed personality traits in adulthood, but psychedelic use has been shown and replicated in clinical research to open the personality domain of openness, which means that we have more capacity for fantasy. We're more cognitively flexible. We can tolerate other people's views and ideas. So to me, so much of what we carry into our sexual relationships that make them unsatisfying is that we don't even tolerate our own desires and fantasies very well, let alone other people's. So these are the ways I think that, psychedelics can really help us to grow as sexual beings. And it's interesting because in the dialogue, people often assume that what I'm talking about is sex on psychedelics, which, I mean, that's a valid topic, right? People ask me about it all the time. But what I'm much more interested in is the post-acute effects of psychedelic experiences on our sexuality. How do we become more spiritually open beings in the erotic domain based on our psychedelic work?
And there are a lot of different types of psychedelics, right? There's a
Yes.
broad range from 5-MeO-DMT, Bufo, to MDMA, to ayahuasca, San Pedro, peyote. I mean, I've talked a lot with different experts on MDMA, on other stuff. Is there a particular psychedelic for someone who is curious and interested about exploring this side of it that you would recommend someone just to start with?
Well, it's a tough question to answer because right now in the clinical paradigm, the only medicine that even is not even really a psychedelic, but gets grouped with psychedelics that is legally accessible to us in conventional medical settings is ketamine. And you can find very good psychotherapists, including myself, who work with ketamine in clinical contexts. I sort of bristle at the question. There are some schools of thought that, especially in the West, that there's a progression, right? And it starts with MDMA, which is the most accessible, and then you do mushrooms, and then you do this, and then you do that. And there are some underground training protocols that very much believe like there's a way to do it, and that's the way to do it. I strongly disagree with that as an approach. I think that we are drawn in moments of openness to specific experiences, specific medicines, maybe specific facilitators. And our responsibility is asking ourselves the critical questions of not, is this medicine going to be too much for me? But why am I being drawn to this in this moment? Right? I've had clients, 5-MeO-DMT is known as one of the most powerful psychedelic experiences you can possibly have. And I have had clients come for integration work in my psychotherapy practice that are psychedelic naive and start with 5-MeO-DMT and have profound experiences because something was very right about the setting and cast of that experience. So I think there is psychedelics kind of have personalities, and we need to know our own personality well enough and what our own needs are well enough, and to be able to assess for safety and risk well enough to find ourselves in the right moment. And that said, even the medicines that we consider to be the more easygoing or user-friendly ones, like psilocybin mushrooms and MDMA, they can also raise profound dysregulation in people.
Yeah.
And sometimes not even when they're being poorly facilitated, they can, psychedelics can and do stir up things in us that can be challenging to work with psychologically.
Right, that things we don't even remember or aware of and not conscious of, and then they get stirred up and it's like you have to now start to deal with it, and it's like, oh my God, and it can be overwhelming, which is why working with a trained therapist, guide, facilitator, who has experience, who has mentorship, maybe part of a lineage, it's all very important in selecting the right person to work with.
Correct.
Yeah. All right. We need to take one last break. When we come back, I do have a couple of more questions, and I do want to ask just a little bit more about the book as well. Okay, Dee Dee?
Wonderful.
All right. Everyone, please stay tuned. You're listening to the Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity. We've been speaking this hour with Dee Dee Goldpaw, author of the book Embrace Pleasure. And we'll be right back to wrap it all up in just a moment.
On Frank About Health, we're not just talking healthcare. We're managing disruption and innovation. Over the last 4 years, I've taken you from epilepsy and COVID to mental health, caregiving, and now the front lines of healthcare transformation. Stay tuned for a healthier future as we bring on the innovators, professionals, storytellers, and advocates who show you how to own your healthcare every Thursday at 5 p.m. Eastern Time on talkradio.nyc.
Are you a purpose-driven individual looking for deeper healing, clarity, and growth? Welcome to the Expansion Room, a transformative space for purpose-driven individuals. I'm Siobhan Larice, host, licensed therapist, and coach. Join me every Wednesday at 5 p.m. Eastern Time on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC at www.talkradio.nyc. Now broadcasting 24 hours a day.
Dee Dee, I imagine you probably get this question a lot. Does the work you're talking about in terms of embracing pleasure and using pleasure as medicine itself, is it? Do you feel it's related to Tantra work at all?
Well, it's an interesting question. You know, I will fully admit that I have a Westerner's knowledge of Tantra, right? Mm-hmm. Tantra is an extremely complex practice. And that word means different things in the Hindu context, in the Buddhist context. Mm-hmm. But as it's used mostly, in my experience, in sort of Western sex positive communities, what we're really talking about is energy exchange between two people, right? A mm-hmm. conscious sexual experience that involves the energy exchange through erotic union.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I think that I can answer the question in several ways. I mean, first, I think any experience where we are approaching sex with that quality of mindful, awake, present intention that we referenced in our earlier segment, right, has the capacity to be psychedelic sex because sex is medicine.
Mm-hmm.
When we welcome in the experience of another person's energy into our body. I mean, that's a profound act, right? In some ways, like we were talking earlier, that we're in a strange cultural moment where sex is vilified and controlled, and at the same time, it's kind of omnipresent culturally. Right. Well, you know, what gets lost in that entire dialogue is what I think you're pointing to, which is that sex actually can be the most profound act of connection that you can undertake with another human being, because you're opening mm-hmm. your body and your energy to them. Mm-hmm. And so to me, I think of psychedelic as not just a description for a set of substances or compounds or plants, but a adjective that to describe a state of being, right? So I talk about this idea of psychedelic sexuality in the book. And some of my foundational principles around psychedelic sexuality has to do more with what is a psychedelic way of looking at sex, taking it to be an adjective, which might mean acceptance for our own body, acceptance for our own gender expression, for the gender expression of other people, the inclusion of spirit or spirituality, whatever that means for us in our sexual practices. I mean, I go through this in detail in the book, but I think you'll get the direction that I'm pointing, right? It was a deeper mm-hmm. levels of acceptance, love, ethics, mm-hmm. and spirituality. To me, that's a very psychedelic way of approaching our sexual relationships.
So we've been talking around the book the whole hour. What do you hope people really gain from reading the book?
Well, I think both in the writing and the book, and every conference I've spoken at, every podcast I do, whether I say these words explicitly or not, I hope with my words and my presence, what I am offering to people is an embodied example that healing is possible for you. Mm-hmm. Whatever you think, whatever has happened to you, you have survived, and you can step into a life that is worth living. Pleasure is your birthright. And that psychedelics may or may not be part of that path, but a psychedelic philosophy of how you can approach a theory of relationships, of mind, of ethics with expansiveness, love, connection, and spirituality, that is accessible to all of us, whether these medicines are something you want to welcome into your life or not. So what I hope people get is really that they're able to see in me that whatever has happened to you in your life, whether it's big T trauma, like things that very much affect the nervous system, or the smaller things of living in a sex negative culture that prohibit us from being as embodied as possible, that they can be healed, and that you can place the shame for whatever has happened to you outside of yourself. So
beautiful. I'm curious, you've been doing this work for so long, and you've been working on yourself, which is beautiful. Was there anything challenging about writing the book for you?
I'll be honest with you, it was one of the greatest periods of joy of my whole life. I mean, writing a book is hard, right? Like, there's deadlines. I basically worked 7 days a week for 2 years. I mean, I was writing on the weekends and evenings and still working full time. So it was a formidable challenge in that way. But I cannot even tell you how many moments when I'd either crack myself up, or I would express something in the right way that was like really coming from my heart. And it felt so deeply satisfying. And I'll tell you, Sam, I have other books in me. There's more on the way.
Wonderful. Well, I will be totally happy to have you come back whenever those future books come out. One more question about the book. Was there anything that came out of you to go into the book that surprised you, that like, whoa, where did that come from?
Well, one thing I would say with this book is, you know, the majority of people who buy books, which is already a diminishing minority in the United States of people who buy books, if you're a book buyer, and I hope you are, often people do not read the whole book. But the last chapter is really about love, it's about psychedelics and love. And the last pages, the end of the book, to me, was spirit moving through me. It was a writing that was an expression that came deeply from my heart and soul. And so I would encourage people, if you get halfway through and you're like, I read enough of this, read the last 10 pages, because if I leave you with those thoughts about love and the importance of love between people, if you get only that from this book, I hope that stays with you.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Before I have you let people know how to contact you, where do you see the future going from here in terms of psychedelics and pleasure? Do you think it's still always going to be on the fringe? Do you think it'll become more mainstream? Do you think that there'll be ways of incorporating it into practice where without losing the specialness of it?
Well, what I can say is that, you know, at the time of writing of this book, there was really only one substantial research study that addressed sexuality and psychedelics at all. And so there is now more emerging research. Even just in the past year, there is an attempt at really looking at how psychedelics impact sexuality. So in the scientific arena, this is becoming a more credible question to begin to explore. But the truth of the matter is, it doesn't really address pleasure, right? I'm talking about something that's really an intersection of spirituality and personal growth and eroticism. And in the West, psychedelic science still is having a hard time grappling with spirituality, let alone pleasure and eroticism. So, you know, I think the truth is the psychedelic world is not one thing. There's science, and thankfully we have that science. There are the people that are holding these spaces in this work in this country. There are the lineage holders of indigenous cultures holding this work. And I hope that we are moving into a moment where all these different arenas can begin to inform each other to form a new psychedelic moment that really can embrace spirituality, pleasure, and joy as a form of healing.
Beautiful. Beautiful. Dee Dee, it's such a pleasure to have you come on the show. Thank you so much for taking the time out of your schedule to come on.
Thank you so much, Sam.
If people want to learn more about you, get in touch with you, how do they find you? Where would they look online?
Yes, absolutely. There is an embracepleasure.com website where you can read more about me. There are multiple buy links for the book, so you can find a place that feels like a good place for you to buy it. And I hope you do. And also learn more about events and podcasts that I'm doing. You can sign up for my mailing list on that website, and you will receive very intermittent email. So I will not clog up your inbox, but like once every few months that update us as to podcasts such as this that I happen to be on or live teaching events that I'm doing.
Oh, beautiful. Beautiful. Dee Dee, thank you so much. Appreciate you. And I appreciate the work that you do and the type of work and what you're doing. And yes, please let me know whenever the next book is going to come out, we'll have you back on the show.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. You're welcome. And of course, thank you, my loyal listeners, for tuning in each week. Without you, there is no show. And don't forget, if you missed any part of today's show, you can always catch the replay on talkradio.nyc, on YouTube at youtube.com/@talkradionyc, on Facebook, on X, on LinkedIn. We're all over the place, and on all the major podcasting platforms, Apple, Spotify, Pandora, iHeartRadio, Amazon Music. And please, if you enjoyed this conversation, if you got some value out of it, don't keep us a secret. Share it with your friends, your colleagues, people you think would be open to hearing the messages of the show. Thank you all for tuning in. Take care. We will talk to you all next week.